The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning and welcome to Sunday Take. I'm your host, Blois Olson. It is Sunday, March 30th, 2025, and this is Sunday Take. As per the theme of 2025, we continue to have volatility. And the word Democrats are using is chaos. But the more I talk to people, it's just uncertainty of where we're headed in this term. And it kind of matches the weather that we're having here in Minnesota. Beautiful day on Friday and not so beautiful weekend. So I hope you are enjoying it. Things that are going to drive the news this coming week, I think one is on Friday, an international student at the University of Minnesota was detained by immigration. Governor Walz has weighed in. Homeland Security is apparently in touch with him. And as we learn more, I think that will become the Democrats' theme. What else is out there? The other thing we're watching is this special election up in Senate District 6. It's going to be crowded. There's two Democrats in the race so far. There's five or six Republicans in the race, including some big names like a Gazelka, a Heintzman. This is one of those places where in a crowded primary, in a special election, it's just very, very uncertain. How do you kind of break through? Early signs, Carrie Heintzman, who's the wife of one of the state reps for the district, Josh Heintzman. Carrie's been very involved in politics and would seem to have an edge. She's raised significant money. But Josh Gazelka carries the Gazelka name. He's a business owner up there. Of course, Jennifer Carnahan, the former state party chair, mayor of Nisswa, hoping for her political comeback. I'm hearing some buzz, and we'll try to back it up and find some evidence of this in the coming weeks, is that Elon Musk's super PAC will play in that race. The Republicans are a little spooked about some of these elections they've lost across the country since Trump took office, these special elections. Then we saw last week Representative Stefaniak pulled back in her nomination to be UN ambassador. And some people speculating that's because Republicans can't afford to lose seats in Congress, and that could have been one of those seats that they were afraid of losing. So the federal issues breaking down to the state issues, and really this legislative session. Senate budget targets came out on Friday. You can find those at the Daily Agenda. But Senate Democrats are saying we're going to cut a couple billion dollars out of this budget. Ultimately, the House, which is in a tie, 67-67, will be the lever. They will have to find a way to agree, not just on budget targets, but about the budget. And I think that's going to be very challenging in the Minnesota House. Governor Walz went on another tour on Thursday to Texas with Beto O'Rourke. And I still am asking, is there a strategy? So all of that leads us to 2026, the U.S. Senate race. Melissa Lopez-Fronson, a previous state senator from Edina. She was part of that flip in Edina from moderate Republican to moderate and liberal Democrat. And she now wants to run for the U.S. Senate. Why? And can she win? That'll be the theme this week on Sunday Take. But before we get to that, a message from Minnesota hospitals. Did you know that in one way or another, Medicaid supports all of us in Minnesota? It's the largest source of federal funding for Minnesota hospitals. And Minnesota hospitals, they rely on Medicaid to keep the doors open. It's a critical program. It faces unprecedented threats that would strip healthcare for the vulnerable. It would devastate the healthcare system and shift these costs that currently reside with the federal government onto the state government and property tax and taxpayers in Minnesota. Minnesota hospitals want you to know we have to protect Medicaid's promise of healthcare access for all Minnesotans, regardless of income, age, or health status. You can learn more at protectmnpatients.org. Again, protectmnpatients.org. That's a message from Minnesota's hospitals. When we come back, former Senator Melissa Lopez-Franson. Welcome back to Sunday Take. My guest this week is Melissa Lopez-Franson. She is running for the U.S. Senate. She's a former state senator, and she joins me now. Former Senator Franson, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, boys.
So, you and I have known each other a long time. I always try to be transparent on this show and in media, but I first met you when you were an executive at Target, but you kind of knew in your heart that you had public service on your mind. You later ran for the state Senate. Now you're running for the U.S. Senate. Talk about who you are and what drives you in public service.
Thanks, boys, again for having me. I am a mom of two little boys, and I am a former small business owner. As you mentioned, I've worked in corporate at Target. I also have worked in, as of late, at the University of Minnesota in government relations. I've been in very different settings, and I served 10 years in the Minnesota Senate. I ended up being the Senate Minority Leader before I left after redistricting. And I've always been involved in the community. When I moved here 24 years ago from Puerto Rico, I started to find out where am I going to be for the next few years to attend the university and get my graduate degree. I met my husband there, who is from Morrison County, and we spent a lot of time outdoors. And he took me, maybe the very first time I came to Minnesota in that very first winter, to the Boundary Waters to ski and get to a lake to ice fish. So I've acclimated very well in the last 20 some years. Our little two boys, they ski, they play soccer. I'm a normal suburban mom, but I'd love to be involved in my community.
When you were involved in your community at first, what were the main issues that drove you, and what are the issues today that are driving you to run for the U.S. Senate?
Well, Blois, if you're paying attention to the news, or you might not want to, it's really chaotic, everything you see. And in my last role, I was witnessing that firsthand while we were cutting at the federal level the programs that really drive our economy, like grants for research at the university, like agriculture supports, and you name it. Every Friday, we brace ourselves for an executive order that would do a ton of damage for not just the public institutions, but to the public at large. As of late, we've seen a lot of cuts in health and human services. That's an area that I spend a lot of time in the Minnesota Senate and know how those safety net programs help Minnesotans achieve the American dream. And we can't stop and turn a blind eye to the dismantling of our public institutions, much less now where all of them are being threatened and to the profit of others. And I just cannot turn a blind eye to that work, to that chaotic environment. And that is why I'm stepping back into public service, bringing my experience, but also my ability to bridge gaps. I'm a workhorse. I'm not a show horse. I'd like to be able to get things done, and just ex accepting cuts and managing the chaos is not where I'm best suited. I'm suited to get things done, and that's why I want to take my experience and background to the United States Senate to represent everyday Minnesotans who are anxious. We've been traveling the state. We're taking this campaign to all 87 counties, not because it sounds good, but because people need to be heard. We need to bring those struggles and those voices to the forefront and fight for every Minnesotan, no matter where they live, no matter what their zip code is.
As you're traveling the state, as you're listening to folks, as you talk to folks in Morrison County, where your husband's from, those rural counties have shifted. They are very solid Trump territory or Republican territory. What are they saying now? What do they think? Because I frankly, as you know, I travel the state as well, and some people who are impacted say, we knew we'd be impacted. We still thought, things needed to change. So what are you hearing when you're out on the road?
Well, again, the anxiety is real. People, they might be directly affected. So we went to International Falls, which is a border community with Canada, spoke to a small business owner who his shop is about to, on the verge of closure because of the tariff war. He has customers that are 6 blocks away in Canada that are no longer coming to his coffee shop. He has a coffee shop, so he imports all his beans from outside of the United States. He also owns a flower shop, and the flowers are from other parts of the world. So he is seeing his profits really diminish. But on top of that, he's having a really hard time keeping doors open, and the anxiety is real. I mean, we are seeing people with tears in their eyes right now because they're really afraid of what's going to happen, whether their Medicaid's going to be there for their child and their family, whether they're able to afford to live their lives and be able to even own, the American dream of owning a home is now farther and farther away without those supports that we would have from the federal government to get your first loan. So the next generation is going to have it worse than ours. And that is not our American way. We want the next generation to be better than what we have now. So I think it's really short-sighted that we're doing so much damage, and it's going to take so much time to fix. So that's why in 2026, it's a pivotal election. We are going to take this campaign throughout the state to share those stories. And maybe in a smaller rural community, you don't have the effects right away. But if you close a postal service office, you're going to have to travel miles and miles away and hours away to pick up your prescription, to pick up your social security check, if you're even going to have it, because that's also being targeted. So there's a lot of anxiety of how people are going to carry forward. And we, as Americans, we take care of each other. We have social programs that we pay with taxpayer dollars to support each other. So we have a strong base and foundation for all Americans. And that's at threat right now.
There's a couple layers I want to get into here. First, I'll just start with you're from Edina. You represented Edina in the Minnesota State Senate. Edina is, as you know, a suburb I write about every 4 years. I kind of try to use that as one of the communities that captures the mood of Minnesota. In my time of 20 plus years writing about Edina, it shifted from a moderate Republican to a solid Democratic community. What is that for Democrats? What can Democrats learn about why Edina has voted more Democratic in the last few years?
Well, when I ran in 2012, the issues on the ballot were mostly social issues, but it was dealing with the election, voter ID, and also with marriage equality. I think Edina, as many parts of the state, which I, this state is purple, right? Is not a solid red or solid blue. Minnesota is purple, so I compare it to the place I represented for 10 years. And they really care about bread and butter issues. They want to make sure that you're making the right decisions with taxpayer dollars, that you're supporting healthcare, because there's a lot of a healthcare community in this area, but also Minnesota's known for healthcare. So supporting those safety net programs that actually make sense, because it's about taking care of people and cutting cost versus having patients end up in the ER. So sound public policy. Of course, we care about social issues, but we've given them a lot of attention as of late. And people want you to go back to the basics, making sure there's stability. Businesses need stabilities. Families need stability. So that notion that we need to make sure that we lay out what is it government's going to do, whether it's taxes, whether it's programs to help grow your business. But again, those issues are really under attack and under threat right now. And that's the economic viability of families and communities, just like Edina, but just like Morrison County. People need to know that they're going to have a job to pay the bill. And if their job is dependent on a federal program that supports that job, then we're going to see a domino effect and people are going to start to suffer.
Now, there's a lot of reflection nationally and some in Minnesota about the future of the Democratic Party. Obviously, nationally, Trump's victory meant a lot of Democrats feeling as though Biden should have bowed out earlier, that the messages weren't right, that, onward and onward, that this laundry list that happens, frankly, every time a party loses an election, that they feel like they should have won. Minnesota has a kind of a unique lens on that this time because Tim Walz was the vice presidential nominee. Are there things in the Democratic Party that have received too much focus or too much attention away from those bread and butter issues you cite?
Well, I think we don't talk enough about them, boys, but we have a party focused on people, working class people, labor unions, and farmers. And we have done a ton of work in that regard. We just probably maybe were louder on other issues. And I think we need to recalibrate as a party and talk about the issues that we've fought so hard for. For instance, housing. We know we need workforce housing, but we also need that housing is achievable, but we can't do it alone. We need to make sure we have sound public policy around those issues. And Democrats have fought for housing for a long, long time. So people need to know that we have fought for economic issues. So let's start beating the drum on the issues that people care about. You know, the price of eggs people talk about is finally starting to settle, but we are certainly wanting to make sure that the skyrocketing prices of groceries is controlled and the inflation is controlled. And the fact that what the Trump administration is doing is actually going to exacerbate the cost of living because of the trade wars. And I know trade wars might not sound something that everybody understands, but it's really the extra money that it's going to cost if you can't import something to your state, right? If we're Minnesota, the first economic partner is Canada and Mexico. The second one is Mexico. We're going to see costs of those goods that come from these places a lot more expensive. So that is what's wrong with this trade policy that's not making Minnesotans safer or have more stability in their budget. So I think we need to refocus on those issues that we understand hurt the bottom line for working families.
My guest is Melissa Lopez-Franson. She's running for the U.S. Senate. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to dive deeper into federal issues, those issues that are making headlines, but we're not quite sure how they're going to be enacted. I'm Blois Olson. You're listening to Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. 3, 2, 1. We're back on Sunday Take. My guest is Melissa Lopez-Franson. She is running for the U.S. Senate. You were talking about trade wars. We'll just start there. There has been this new nationalism or this feeling, and from the Iron Range where there were layoffs this past week through the Rust Belt, bringing back good-paying jobs has been a challenge for the country. And it's not a, it's not a conservative issue. It's not a liberal issue. Many people blame it on global trade. But we also have workforce issues. How do you dig into those issues? How do you try to ensure that there are good paying jobs that are driven by the private sector economy as much as having the labor to fill the jobs that we need filled these days?
Well, Blois, I've worked really closely as a small business owner, even when I work in corporate with the Chamber of Commerce, and working with industry is critical. But also in my time at the U and with higher ed, and including our state colleges and universities, we play a role, jointly, to ensure that we know where the gaps in workforce are. But then a lot of these institutions help with federal dollars to drive the economy. And I'll take an example. You have funding from the federal government that comes to one of our universities, whether it's a state college and university or the U, or even to the private sector, if you will. And then they take that technology and that research to market. We can't do it alone. It's an ecosystem. We need to make sure that we have partners with what we hear on the ground with the business community, but also with how we train our workforce. So if we have a workforce shortage, then we know it's coming. Then let's tackle that. Some of the funding that we got from the federal government was to help teachers with special ed, and we know we have a gap in special ed teachers, and now we're cutting the funding to promote that area. We know we have a gap. We want to stop relying on fossil fuels. So why are we cutting funding to find technologies to replace them? So those are things that we work hand in hand with the industry sector, with our partners, with trade associations. We all play a role, but that ecosystem together is where we focus on what should the state economy look like. You know, Minnesota is rich, right? We have the mining community that you mentioned. We're losing 600 jobs. They might not come back. What are we doing to promote those workers? Because in those communities, that is all they have. And if we are the place in the country which produces 80% of iron ore and pellets, How is that going to hurt or not, or put us in the, in the track to productivity in the future, when you're cutting off the rest of the world and there's no market for those pellets? You are making those jobs go away, and not really understanding the consequences long term. So I think the policy needs to be targeted, and if we're going to target cars, who are we giving the benefit to? Certainly Elon Musk has already his print on the in the country. Is that what we want to continue to promote, one particular monopoly over the other? I'd love to bring more jobs to Minnesota and to the states with manufacturing, but what does that manufacturing look like if we're not promoting the universities and trade associations and trade colleges and trades to provide that workforce? We need to invest in their training and in their education. It's not just just bringing jobs back and they open a plant and they have workers right away. It's an ecosystem that we have to work together to make that a thriving economy.
Let's talk about, you brought up Elon Musk. There's obviously a lot that he's done. There's a lot of headlines. There's a lot of bloviating, I'll call it. We're kind of waiting to see what actually happens, what's real. In the last segment, you brought up Social Security. Social Security is one of those places where Elon Musk will say something, but then the reality is that the Social Security Administration says something else. One person pointed out that, look, if they find a certain amount, let's just say it's $1 billion in fraud or waste in Social Security, that $1 billion could go back to reassuring Social Security. And that's what Social Security Administrator said. How do you separate when you're on the campaign trail the fear that is kind of caused by headlines or grandiose statements with the reality that on a day-to-day basis, we still really don't know what the impact of some of these DOGE cuts are going to be, or how they're going to be rolled out. Even just Friday, federal judges held back three of these executive orders. How do you talk to these audiences and these citizens and help them kind of separate the hype from what's real or what might be real?
Well, we can't afford fraud and abuse, and we have to target it and make sure it goes away. There's always going to be that threat and that risk. The question is, how much are you going to put to find that fraud and abuse? We tried that in Health and Human Services a while back with the Inspector General, and there's a trade-off, right? You put more resources to find fraud. Are you going to reap those benefits from the resources you put in? So there's a question of how much do you grow government, if you will, to find and target it, or to have some real checks and balances throughout government, which I think it's the prudent way. We have ways of monitoring fraud when it is to credit cards. Why can't we do the same when it comes to government services? So I think there's a lot of innovation in that space. It's not just saying we're just going to cut for cut's sake because we think there's fraud. No, let's pinpoint where we think there is. Let's have some high alerts. Let's use the best practices and AI and other things. And I'm not saying that's going to be the solution for everything, but the scare tactics that we just have rampant fraud in Health and Human Services, and now we're just going to get rid of 20,000 employees, which is what the new secretary has just announced indiscriminately. It's a short-sighted, and it's really dangerous because now you're putting jeopardy the services in jeopardy. To assume that 20,000 employees are not doing work for the American people is a slap in the face to federal workers, but it's a slap in the face of the people who are expecting the resources that they put their taxpayer dollars into, as well as safety net programs, et cetera. And Social Security is a safety net program that we have a social compact with the country, with the federal government. And I don't think that's something that anyone wants touched, much less by DOGE.
I know we're going to talk plenty down the line as this campaign evolves, including probably a couple forums or debates. But the last topic I want to kind of dig into, and I think it reflects one of the more complex parts of our economy. You were involved in it at the University of Minnesota in your role there, and that's healthcare. What do you believe, if you are sent to Washington, can be done on healthcare that would either stabilize or drive down costs for consumers?
Well, that is a great question. There's a lot we can do, but let's just start with the middle band. When I was in the Minnesota Senate, 9 of my 10 years, I served on the Health and Human Services Committee. And one of the issues that I tackled was the middleman in pharmacy, pharmacy benefit managers. Two of them are the largest ones were located here in Minnesota in my district. And I put a bill together with doctors in the Minnesota Medical Association because they were spending tremendous time doing bureaucracy instead of providing care. And then these PBMs, which argue that they can save money and costs for the end user, actually would deny what the doctor ordered, essentially. So we try to put guardrails. They fought us, and we won at the end. But those are the type of reforms that are common sense. Yes, there should be prior auth, maybe perhaps for a therapeutic, which is extremely expensive. Excuse me. But for instance, when I was pregnant, I had a high pr risk pregnancy, my 2 times with my 2 boys. And I needed heparin and to so I wouldn't miscarriage. And I had to get a prior auth to get heparin. And there is no generic for heparin. So those are just examples of one person, but there's so many that I heard working on that issue that people were literally denied care or a service because folks that are not their primary doctors were making decisions from a distance. And now they're going to use AI to make those decisions in many cases. So it's scary. We should not be making money by denying care. And that is something that a small solution is to regulate PBMs at the federal level.
Melissa, thanks for joining me on Sunday Take. I know we'll talk down the line and enjoy your time out traveling Minnesota.
Thanks, boys. Have a great day.
When we come back, this week's take. Welcome back to Sunday Take. As we navigate these volatile times, know that we'll have all the information at thedailyagenda.com. It's our daily website where we publish tip sheets, newsletters, and news for you to follow along and be smart before breakfast, lunch, and hopefully dinner. This week's take is really about the state of the Republican Party. November and January, they celebrated the Trump victory. They celebrated a narrow majority in the U.S. House. They celebrated a majority in the U.S. Senate. And since January 21st, 20th, it has been a churn of chaos. A churn of headlines, but headlines unlike the first Trump term. As the election happened and people were worried, I asked them to just watch and see where their lives were affected. And one big difference between Trump first term and Trump second term is real lives are being more impacted, not just on high profile issues like immigration, but indeed on actual jobs, starting with the federal government. It's been messy, it's been sloppy, and while I am as big of a fan of disruption as possible, you can't disrupt people's lives willy-nilly and expect people to feel secure or safe. And Republicans and Trump and Musk have done that. Furthermore, you look at the style and the words of Elon Musk and you can't help to think, does he really understand the way government works and the way in which the economy works? Then we'll shift to the trade wars. Someone told me earlier this week that they were with some farmers, and those farmers said, look, we voted for Trump. He said he was going to have a trade war, so we're getting what we voted for, but we're still not sure how it's going to work. Well, those farmers aren't the only people not sure how it's going to work. The reality is that I don't know that Republicans know how it's going to work. In fact, is it going to work? That's the biggest question that I am asked when I travel right now. Is Trump's chaos, is this reset of the economy going to work? And here's what I've shared. My fundamental belief is that there did need to be some sort of reset in the economy. There did need to be some sort of harsh reality on government spending. Style over substance matters a lot in politics. And frankly, it's the style of Trump that is on the verge of costing Republicans their majority in the U.S. House. The idea that they pulled back Elise Stefniak from being the UN ambassador tells me that they're worried. Because think about it. If the U.S. House flipped to Democrats, Trump would immediately have a stonewall there from Democrats. It wouldn't be that different than when Nancy Pelosi was Speaker. And this time, Democrats even have more energy, and they may have election momentum on their side for the midterm, where they could pick up major seats in the U.S. House. There could be a shift. And this reminds us that in midterms, they can be historic shifts. So if disruption is awful and jobs are at stake and the economy is suffering, Republicans will be in trouble. Which brings me to the biggest point for Republicans. Trump has caused this chaos. Trump has driven this chaos, and Republicans have cheered it. But when it starts costing them seats, how will they differentiate? How will Republicans push back against Trump? And I zoom you in to the Iron Range of Minnesota, where Republicans have finally taken a majority of those legislative seats. They've been trying for years. They've been close. And this last election, they did it. Democrats barely competed. So in blue-collar land of rural Minnesota, where the stalwarts of the U.S. Steelworkers Union pumped jobs and good-paying jobs into those mines and out of those mines for years. Now, those tariffs and the economy have caused 600 people to get layoff notices from those mines. There's not that many mining jobs left compared to the glory years of the Iron Range. And so, how does Pete Stauber, how do the Republican legislators defend Trump now? They have to be hoping that there's a quick economic recovery. They have to be hoping that it's short-term pain for long-term gain, that somehow wages go up, that somehow there's back pay. But that is a burden on the state, because if they are laid off for a long time, then it has been tradition to extend unemployment benefits for minors. Minnesota doesn't have that much money right now. So this is, as they say, a quagmire. How do Republicans defend Trump when people in their own districts are losing jobs? Hope is not a strategy, as we've said here before. So Republicans need a strategy. They need a strategy away from Trump. And I'm not sure they're capable of coming up with it when he has the loudest bullhorn. He has the social media machine, and they have proven that they are afraid to push back. Very afraid to push back, especially now that he's the president again. So Democrats' greatest opportunity might not be because they have come up with the right message. It's because of the human impact of Trump's moves. When asked, I say that I believe the harsh economic reality is meant to come back quickly, so we are out of what is, I think, a recession or a pending recession by January or February of next year, and that by the midterm, the economy is booming or growing back, giving Republicans something to run on. Political memories are short, but economic pain memory is long. And if that's the way the Trump plan proceeds, places like the Iron Range may not be Republican safe holds much longer. I'm Blois Olson. That's the Sunday Take. Follow along all week at the Daily Agenda. I'll be with Vanita Monday through Thursday at 6:20. I hope you enjoy Corzo on sports, and enjoy being warm this morning and staying warm, because spring is around the corner, but you wouldn't know it today.
It is not hard to destroy a college. Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic. It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Until next time, that's The Take.
Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one. So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality Gaze,
let's love.